Ocean FM.
Ours to Protect, brought to you by Ocean FM, the IBA, and funded by Commission Le Mans with the television licence fee. Check out ourstoprotect.ie for more information.
Hello to everyone out there today. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome you to the first programme in this new series of Ours to Protect. For the next few months, we're changing the format slightly with a half-hour broadcast at the end of each month for delving into climate change, sustainability and environment. We're kicking off today after a very busy May, which saw lots of environmental events going on across the Northwest. The good weather saw scores of people out joining Maeve's Dragon Warriors, Sligo Rowing Club and Sligo Kayak Club for a fabulous day of Ishka Aulin down at Doherty Park, where they were celebrating all that's good about the nature connected with our waterways and the healing power of water. Our coastal waters also received a boost, with green coast and blue flags appearing all along the northwest shoreline as people took to the beaches, and the beautiful weather tempted even reluctant bathers to chance a dip. We can be very proud that Ross's Point and Enniscrone were two of only 10 beaches nationally to receive both the Green Coast Award and the Blue Flag. With Strigia and Dunmore in Sligo also celebrating their Green Coast Awards, and Blue Flags proudly flying for another year at Bundoran, Rathnaula, Fintra and Merva in South Donegal. Of course, the good weather also gave a great boost to some of the stalwarts of the environmental calendar, with National Bike Week, National Biodiversity Week and Leitrim Cycling Festival seeing an inspiring array of events across the Northwest, encouraging us all to enjoy the wind in our hair and the glory of nature bursting into bloom all around us. The Leitrim Gathering also had a green feel, hosting a repair cafe for tired clothing, workshops on the beautiful Japanese art of visible mending, and recycling old t-shirts into gorgeous macrame. Now, on the back of this sun and fun-filled activity, we're going to be talking all things sustainable and active in relation to travel today. For this series, we're taking inspiration from young people across the Northwest, and I'm starting with a flavour of what they would like to see prioritised when it comes to environment.
It's getting more and more important every year to, like, we have to take care of this world or else it's just going to burn.
I think if they do more, like, events like this, things that just raise awareness, then it could definitely become more popular.
Try to fix the climate. Effective ways to actually cause change, positive change in the environment.
Definitely pollution, I'd say. And greenhouse gases and all that sort of crap.
I mean, I don't think global warming will ever be solved, ever. But we can definitely slow it down and minimalize its destruction and effect.
I just want to see in the next few years, when I get old, that there's still birds in the sky.
Factories like to pollute the air and stuff.
Try not make like unimportant car trips.
Not trying to recycle plastic.
Probably reduction of emissions is something that's needed to be done.
Burn of fossil fuels, mostly cars. I know electric cars are meant to be the future, but
seeing so many cars because they produce bad gases.
So that's what's led us to the topic of sustainable and active transport for today. We'll be joining some local schools as they participated in Seacht an na Rothar. We'll talk to local transport researcher Brian McCann, and we'll hear from Sligo Cycling Campaign. But first, let's check in and see exactly what it means to the students we spoke to when they talk about sustainable travel.
Scootering.
Mm-hmm. Skateboarding.
Walking.
Carpooling.
I get the bus usually.
I like the idea of travelling without using carbon emissions, and riding your bike is a really good way of doing that.
You can take a bus because that like takes up less space because lots of people can go on it.
Carpooling,
like
carpool
cars.
If people are running.
Walk more and cycle more. Scooters.
Maybe like use a bike or walk. Like maybe if you like live closer, you should definitely go for like walking or like cycling and stuff like that.
Like using the bus or like carpooling.
I carpool.
We carpool to school together and we have an electric car.
Yeah.
Yeah, carpooling's really good. It's yeah.
Or bus.
I don't really carpool. I go on bus.
So the question is whether these sustainable transport options are actually realistic for us in the Northwest. Anyone that lives in and around Sligo town has seen a real improvement in the frequency of the S1, the S2 and the S3 services over recent years. But what about the people that don't live near these routes? Brian McCann is a transport and environmental specialist lecturing in engineering in ATU Sligo. Has he any answers for our students? I spoke to him about practical ways in which people can cut the greenhouse gases produced when they're getting from one place to another.
It takes a bit of planning and organising, you know, because the local link services have come into Sligo very, very strongly over the last number of years, last 2 or 3 years. And they've developed new, you know, local links from Coolani and Ballymote and Drumahair and, you know, Sligo and Leitrim and Balladreen and Grange as well. And it does take a bit of planning and organising, but I always advise people go onto the TFI app or use even the Google, people are used to Google Map, and you put in your own home to where you're going to go to. It will actually come up with all the local link and all the different bus services. Okay. So it's much more user friendly. You can buy your tickets online and you can get a Leap card, and, you know, it's quite cheap as well. And they're fairly reliable, you know, and very frequent. And it's always reliability and frequency are the two biggest determinators of whether or not people are going to use the services. If they're frequent and you know they're going to come along, or at least you can find out when they are coming along, you're more likely to use them. Whereas if you don't know, you're going to hop in your car. What's made the local link so popular is that if you do go out and have a drink, it avoids having to get a taxi along journeys. But there are other aspects as well. It can help reduce your overall miles that you do in your car, which is a good thing from your own pocket. You know, Irish people tend to look at things through economics as much as they do environmental. And if you think about the economic side of it, you do have a lot of savings if you don't have to pay. You know, fuel is expensive, but also it's not good for the environment in terms of emissions and not good for public health either. If you can hop on a bus, you're reducing the mileage on your car, which is good as well if you're going to trade it in, because we tend to have high mileage in rural areas. I was involved in a project with Leitrim County Council, First and Last Green Mile, where we were looking at how do we get people from rural areas of Leitrim into the actual bus services, because a lot of people, and that would apply to Sligo as well, of course, a lot of people are living close to villages, but they're not living in the villages. The idea there would be even having community taxis, community cars to pick up people and bring them, particularly if they don't have a car, of course, and then they can get the bus. And then those who have a car, what they've done in parts of rural Northern Ireland, they have small parking areas beside the bus, maybe holding 6, 7, 8 cars, so people can drive and then get the bus for the longer part of the journey. So what's called integrated journeys, they're really important, because that's often the thing that stops people. Say, oh, well, like, you know, there is a bus from Coolani to Sligo, but I live 4 kilometres away from, you know, how am I going to use that bus? So, you know, having even designated areas where people could park and ride as such, you know, that can help reduce those journeys, whereby you sort of feel it's just so much more convenient to use my car. Mm. And then the other factor, of course, is that you tend to walk a bit more. Even if you're using the bus, you're walking more. You're not just hopping in your car and then driving and parking close to where you're going. So there's a tendency to be a bit more active. So there's a lot of wins in trying to use a bus. And of course, cycling and walking would be a no-brainer if you can use that and you're living close to where you're going to, relatively close anyway, with e-bikes. E-bikes having that additional extension on the journey. Bolt have their e-bikes. There are lots of those. They're all virtually connected around the town. Their system works quite well that way. It's not a docking system where there's only bikes in one location and you have to keep returning it. So it is good for people living in the area to look at bikes. So I'd say the combination of those social and environmental things and economic would make it worthwhile for any journey. Anything you can do to reduce your carbon footprint or make your travel a bit more active would be better.
What Brian says there really does ring true. Being more sustainable is a lot more practical if we just take a small bit of time to plan first. And once we get over those first hurdles, it just becomes a habit. He gave us lots of different options there, and it's worth thinking about trying out even just one of those. As he rightly said, anything that you can do to cut down your car use is an improvement, even if it's just part of a journey. Now, getting out on the bike is also an option for replacing short car journeys, where you might just be stuck for parking or idling in traffic. And if you want to encourage more cycling journeys, confidence is important. And cycling from a young age really helps to foster this. Earlier in May, as part of National Bike Week, students in schools across the Northwest were leading the way with lots of fun events. Students from Scoil Ursula, Carbery National School, the Ursuline College, Creevy National School, Maena College, Holy Family School, Inver National School and Scoil Mhuire all took to their bicycles. and I was lucky enough to get to catch up with some of the pupils from Carbery and the Ursuline College. First, I met the Carbery students by the riverside.
So we were cycling for bike week.
And we got ice cream.
And we did, like, I think it was a 3 kilometre loop around Sligo countryside. The only hard bit was the uphill, and it was easy from there. And it was really satisfactory when you got to the end.
Especially because you kept beating me.
Carbery has the travel flag.
Yeah.
Because like everyone started like walking more to school and using their bikes or scooters.
Yeah.
This week is bike week, and we went on our bicycles from our school to Dorley Park.
How was it?
It was really fun. It was really nice. And then afterwards, we did a loop around the Cleaver Park, and now we're at Ripple's going to get some ice cream.
Two scoops of free ice cream, Mammy Johnson's.
And did you enjoy cycling today?
Yeah, it was very fun, and a bunch of exercise as well, instead of going and doing work inside. So it was a very nice activity.
And the weather was lovely and warm.
Too warm.
Yeah. It's really fun.
Stay fit.
Meanwhile, the Ursuline College students were challenging their fitness with a cycle to Strand Hill, under the eye of teachers Deirdre Cullinan, Regina Grennan, and Green Schools Travel Officer Dolores McQueen.
So there's 19 of them. They're from the Ursuline College in Sligo. And there's two teachers. And we have the guards brought us up onto the Strand Hill Road.
How did you get on?
Great, great, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a few issues with bikes and gears and stuff like that. But what a day, my God.
In conjunction with the Green Skills, we've done this for nearly, I'd say, 7 or 8 years now. It's an annual thing that we do. We open it up to all the schools, but we cap it at 20 students in total. So it's a buy-in, yeah. So they all like to cycle. And so yeah, a lot of them probably wouldn't have bikes.
Or else they wouldn't have bikes that fit them.
We were cycling to Strand Hill today because it's bike week.
How did you find it?
Good.
Yeah, it was good. It's a bit tiring, but yeah.
Very warm outside.
Yeah, the weather is good for this cycle today.
And was there anything along the way that you were a bit concerned about?
Probably if there was no cycle lanes on the way to here.
Just like the main cars going by, there wasn't that much room in the cycle lanes.
We came from the Ursuline and we cycled to Strand Hill, and there's like 19 of us, I think.
Yeah.
Brilliant, and how did you find it?
It was good. Apart from the hills.
And it was really hot, especially in the helmet.
And why do you think bike week's important?
For the environment and to like get outdoors. Show people how important cycling is for the environment and stuff.
And how easy it is to cycle around.
It's a good life skill.
On the beautiful seafront in Strand Hill, Dolores McQueeny told me a little bit more about the Green Schools programme.
The Green Schools is a charity, a government charity. There's 18 flags from biodiversity, litter and waste, energy, global citizenship, and there is food and biodiversity. They all go into schools. We hold seminars at the beginning of September. And then we advise them from September. There is a Green Schools coordinator in every school, so they are asked by their staff or their colleagues to take on the Green Schools programme or Green Schools flag for 2 years. And it's a 7-step programme, and the 7 steps can be done throughout the 2 years. And the first step is they organise a committee within the school, and that should be a representation of all the school, so maybe 2 out of each year. We try to do our best to organise it into the curriculum.
And are there topics that are more popular than others?
Well, I think myself personally that the travel and biodiversity and marine, it's got broad appeal. And travel is very good because it's the travel officer that comes in and teaches them bike skills. The most important thing in travel is walkability around the school to see how safe it is to cycle or to walk. Okay. So it's not just cycling and using the bus, it's also park and stride. In the walkability, we take the committee on the walkability or cyclability, and we identify things that should be fixed to make break the barriers of walking to school. Mm-hmm. Slow down signs, ramps, areas to park. And then they put all that together as a report, and they have to do maths and statistics, kind of. So once you've got the walkability done, then you can see what issues are that school, because every school is different. We can have a no idling campaign in the school and travel skills, where we're trying to get teachers to use city transport. Then you're teaching the kids how to get on a bus, how to read a timetable, how to understand the map of a bus. That's a life skill, and that is good for teachers as well, because it all links into map reading and geography. The main aim is trying to get vehicles away from the school, and it clogs any city. And idling, some people in buses just don't turn off the engines. Yeah. So the air around the school even is really bad.
How many schools do you have in your area?
I have about 17, and that's global citizenship travel or travel. Global citizenship is about the SDGs, the Sustainable Development Goals. We have 17 Sustainable Development Goals, and we teach them that each one can refer to travel, and lots of them link. The students and the pupils and the teachers are very much part of it. With all the flags, you know, there's so much work being done.
In fact, Dolores also said that many schools don't actually encourage cycling due to the dangers around speed on country roads, and especially at schools in more rural areas. A speed check done as part of a campaign outside Ransborough National School in Sligo showed that the vast majority of cars passing outside the school were at speeds of over 60 kilometres an hour. Now, teacher Regina Grennan, who we heard from briefly earlier, gave her view as a lifelong cyclist. She cycles to work in Sligo from Newton Manor every day. Now, I know that this isn't for everyone, and as you'll hear, her commute is pretty exceptional. But her example does show us what's possible when we're thinking about excuses like bad weather or lack of cycle lanes.
I live in Newtown Manor. It's kind of halfway between Manor Hamilton and Drumahaire, but 15 kilometres from school. Yeah, hail, rain or snow, I cycle. Not snow, it's a bit dangerous. Always, like when I was young, I cycled to school, and when I was in college, I cycled. So yeah, I've always cycled.
And why do you cycle?
For fitness, yeah, and I suppose the environment as well. I enjoy it. For me, it's good to get exercise before I face into a classroom. I think it gets me in a good headspace. I enjoy it, even though it can be a bit dangerous. The biggest problem is speeding and people on phones, I think. So that's the biggest danger. They come up too close, they overtake, you know, on bends when there's cars coming. So yeah, there isn't a good understanding of cycling, or I suppose respect for cycling either. You know, understandably, parents are nervous because it isn't really safe, to be honest. And I think it would have to be a lot safer before they'd allow their children onto the roads. Except for where you have, in urban areas where you have cycle paths, but on country roads, they're very narrow and there's too many cars and driving too fast.
Research and experience from pretty much every country where cycling rates have increased consistently shows that improved cycling infrastructure is the one thing that really increases cycling uptake. More and better cycle lanes. So what do the students of Carbery and the Ursuline think might increase the number of people opting for 100% emission-free travel on bicycles?
Usually on my road, there's like cars are going way too fast. Mm-hmm. And I know that we've like reduced the speed limit a little bit, but still it's like it's more dangerous to cycle when you're not sure if cars are overtaking you or they're going too close, and there's a lot of road accidents happening.
More cycling paths on roads, or just like more paths for cycling around remote areas.
You know, when it's green man, there's a bunch of cars still going, so it's kind of just that.
Well, cycle lanes would definitely help.
Yeah. We were cycling yesterday, and we have to wait like 5 or 10 minutes. I know the cars have the right of way, but we have to wait like 5 or 10 minutes for someone to actually let us by.
And
it's quite scary.
We live on the second C road, and there's not a footpath there, so like you kind of just have to cycle on the main road to get
places. I think the county council should probably build a footpath there. Yeah.
If you don't live near town, there's not really any cycle lanes. So you just gotta trust that you won't get crashed into.
Drivers to be more mindful of like cyclists and like be more careful with them.
Maybe because, put a speed bump.
Yeah, they're more vulnerable than like being in a car, because you're, you know, exposed.
We Would you be happy to let your kids cycle to school?
Well, no, not really. Not from the point of view of safety, unless there was an adult with them.
Yeah.
This is ongoing. They don't encourage because it's so unsafe.
Being realistic, it is unlikely that we'll be able to complete a full journey in the cycle lane if we're taking to the streets on our bikes at the moment. I asked Gemma Woods, a member of the Sligo Cycling Campaign, for some simple advice to keep us safe when we're on the road, both for turning and when sharing the space with cars.
Before you make a move at all, you should be looking maybe, you know, 20 metres back, starting to look, starting to see what's in front of you, how you're going to take the junction, get in place to indicate at that stage, and just have a whole sense of your surrounds. So if you're taking a right turn, first of all, you look behind you to see what's happening, get into your position, indicate by putting your hand out to the right, fully out, and get into position then in your lane, and you continue indicating until maybe if it's a stop junction you have to stop and wait and go again. Maybe if there's lots of traffic, indicate again just as you go around the corner. But I think the important thing is to indicate good and early, like don't be afraid to extend your arm either and make it clear that that's what you're going to do. That's the important thing. The thing is, if you're out in the centre of the lane, the cars will see you. That's the whole thing. If you're on a narrow road and you're taking primary position, the centre of the lane, cars can't pass you, and that's the safest way for the cars as well as for the cyclists as well, because I'm talking about maybe going under the bridge on the Strandhill Road there. And that's a very narrow one, and there's no footpaths on one side. So what do you do? Like, you know, you need to take primary position, which is centre of the lane, and you know, I've done it, and you know, cars mightn't be pleased, but I keep saying, oh, you'll be safe, I promise you, and next thing a car comes around the corner, and you know, so I feel I'm doing them a favour as well as myself.
So the point is that by staying in, you're encouraging them to try
and pass
you, and it may not be safe.
It's not safe, yeah, that's right. And, you know, so you don't stay in too far at all, you know, ever. And there are drains as well, which, you know, are a hindrance to the cyclists. So if you're cycling along, you don't cycle right in on the yellow lines either. Like, you give yourself, you know, a foot or thereabouts, you know, and then if you're taking primary position, you're right out in the middle of the lane.
It was heartening to hear from the students that they're still regularly taking to their bikes.
I cycle like up to training twice a week. It's not too far.
You just cycle to the shops. And not to school, but I cycle pretty regularly.
Yeah, I cycle training.
My friend's house.
Yeah, my friend's house. And sometimes if we're bored and it's a lovely day, we'll go out for a cycle. Yeah.
And go ice cream.
Or with our dogs.
Yeah.
I usually cycle with Bella. Yeah, I usually cycle with Bella.
We actually cycled to school. Hannah, did you cycle to school?
Not today. When the weather's nice and it's raining.
But then you can always wear like raincoats and maybe like a protective cover for your bike.
Well, where we live, I have like a little track I can go up and down sometimes. But yeah, it's a bit remote. So if I was going to cycle, it would have to be on roads and stuff like that.
Now, for anyone looking to keep that momentum going, Sligo Cycling Campaign is planning to encourage children to cycle to summer camps in the month of July this year. Here's Una Lestrange to fill us in on the details.
So it's an initiative with support from the Power to Change programme, which is a collaboration between Sligo PPN and ATU Sligo to try and persuade people to change their behaviour. We decided that maybe we'd concentrate on getting people to think about or to hopefully try to cycle to summer camps this summer. Well, there's lots of barriers to cycling, okay? And one of the ones that people often say is the weather. So obviously in the summer, it's bright and the weather will hopefully be lovely and sunny. And also, while we do realise that a lot of parents are under huge pressure when it comes to summer camps, trying to get the kids out the door, other people might have a little bit more time to get to and from a summer camp than they would to and from school. And we're hoping that if we can persuade people, oh, look, maybe we can cycle to a summer camp, maybe this cycling thing is possible, that will then feed on to other aspects of their life. And give the children a good habit and give the parents a good habit and encourage everybody to cycle more. We're hoping as well that all children love to do things with their friends, and we're hoping that it becomes kind of a bit of a group effort, so that parents and children can cycle together and they can see it as being a very normal thing and a very fun thing. We're working with a number of different camps. kids that are attending those camps in those particular weeks can sign up, and for every day that they cycle, they will be able to enter into a prize draw. One of the big difficulties is recognise that not all children are going to be able to cycle. Either they don't have a bicycle, they don't have the time, the distance that they're travelling to camp is too long. Or the big one is, of course, is that our roads are sometimes just too dangerous. The camp, it's within cycling distance, but the roads are just not safe. So for those children, we're going to have a competition where we want them to do something around cycling. Ideally, what my want is I want them to badger their local politicians to demand cycle lanes. If they don't want to do that, they can write a poem or draw a picture, and they can also enter the competition. And what I say to my friends is it should be as easy to get onto your bike as it is to get into your car. So one of the things we're going to be doing is we're going to have a bike check where people can bring the bikes and we can have a look over the bikes. And also just to remind people that you do have to, you know, if it's not your habit, then you have to do a little bit of extra preparation. Know where your helmet is, know where your bicycle is, check that the brakes work, check that the tyres are pumped up. And then it becomes easy because the car is only a habit. And if the car is sitting outside there and you're running a little bit late, it's very tempting to get into the car. But we're hoping through this campaign to break the habit of that for a few people, and that they then will develop the healthy, happy habit of cycling.
The camps that are taking part in the campaign were chosen for being close to good cycling infrastructure in Sligo. So anyone attending St Mary's Cool Camp or the Sligo Woodland School in July and the Sligo Regional Sports Centre Summer Camp or the Sligo Yacht Club on the week of the 14th of July can participate. Sligo Cycling Campaign will provide you with details about registering and availing of a free bike check through the camp organisers. Now, if you'd like to embrace the healthy, happy habit of cycling but aren't signed up to one of these camps, you can email sligocycles@gmail.com and they'll be happy to give you a bit of advice on getting started. And then you can also enter the competition by sending them a photo of your bike taken at the summer camp. If you have a little bit of breathing space, it would be worth thinking about it, because it really does offer an opportunity to foster a little bit of freedom and independence for our kids.
All of us can remember the freedom of being on a bike as a child, and there's nothing like it. The feeling of going somewhere under your own steam. You're not this passive passenger. In the last 30 years, it's the mum's job to get them out, or the dad's job to get them out. And come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. You find you put a child on a bicycle and suddenly they want to go places. And the independence and the joy of cycling, that's what we really want to get across, is cycling is really joyous. And if we can get the children to recognise that and get their parents to recognise that, we think we can actually drive change.
And tell me a little bit about the benefits of cycling.
Oh, goodness. There's no end to the benefits of cycling. You know, none of us get enough exercise anymore, right? So my husband is now cycling to and from work, and I'm looking at him and he's getting an hour of exercise every day. And he's got into the habit, which means that if he comes home and spends the rest of the evening on the couch, it's okay. He's done his exercise for the day. That's the number one habit. Number two habit is car parking. How much stress do we all have around car parking? You cycle, you don't have to worry about car parking. You don't have to really worry about traffic. Obviously, there is still the danger of cars, but cycling is so versatile. You're in your environment. So if you're on the bike and you see somebody you know, you just stop. You have a chat with them. You can't do that in a car because there'll be a line of cars behind you, all of them waiting to get past, beeping at you. On the bicycle, you can pull over, you can have a chat. You see things. You see the weather. You're alive. And absolutely, if you cycle home from work, you leave work behind you. By the time you get home, you've had a mental break and the day is behind you and nothing can beat it.
If cycling isn't your thing, you might consider an e-bike. They definitely improve accessibility for people and they're also ideal for those journeys that are just a bit too long for the conventional bicycle or where you're under time pressure. If you're cycling to work or to an event for which you need to arrive freshly pressed, an electric bike can get you there without even breaking a sweat. It was interesting to see the figures released this week, evaluating the first 3 years of the Bolt Bike Scheme in Sligo. Since June 2022, over 100,000 users in the Sligo area have taken at least one trip by Bolt Bike, with over 200,000 journeys made in total. Of course, some of us are more enthusiastic than others. One prolific Sligo user alone travelled 3,362 kilometres across the 3 years, and took 1,500 trips. The good news for transport emissions is that over 380,000 kilometres were travelled using Bolt bikes, and that's something that benefits all of us, with cleaner air and fewer cars on the streets. Now, even with a scheme like this on our doorstep, cars are the primary option for lots of people. What if replacing journeys with other means is just not an option?
Get electric cars because they're burning less fuel.
And carbon dioxide, it puts holes in the greenhouse layer, ozone layer around our environment, which causes more heat to get in, which means that the poorer countries, which are the least factoring contributors to climate change, become hotter and more people like die in places.
Well, it's also polluting there for all the animals.
When are we going to be able to properly get like proper solar panels and show how the electric cars to get proper charges nearly all over Ireland? It's never really there.
Fully electric cars, what year that will be.
Yeah.
And to stop burning fuels.
We have solar panels, so the car doesn't cost much to charge because it gets the charging off the solar panels. So.
But like over time, it'll be like more beneficial and we'll see like all the money we're saving from it.
But we've had the solar panels for long.
Is there any bad thing about it?
No.
Battery.
Sometimes like runs off
charging.
But when we drive up to Dublin, there's this hotel on the way there and has like a humongous supercharger. So if we go in there and we have lunch there and then the car charges and when we it's back at 100%, so it doesn't take too much effort.
Well, the greatest barrier to electric cars here seems to be cost. A new car will set you back a fair bit. And people are just unsure about the advisability of a second-hand car where batteries might be older. Other concerns that come up again and again in all the research relating to our attitudes to electric cars are around range, charging, and the longevity of EV batteries. Now, this is not something that I have any expertise on, but luckily it just so happens that Brian McCann, our transport expert, is what would be considered an early adopter of the electric car.
There are people that need a car. Then there's the other side, is that certain journeys you could switch to bus, public transport or cycling. And then the other thing would be you could try and decarbonize your car. I've driven electric since 2019. So the short range car is a 2016 Leaf. So it's 9 years old, still on 80% of its battery. You know, the Leafs were quite basic, like so Teslas and stuff like that are lasting a lot longer. They reckon the batteries will give you usable up to about 15, 16 years. You can actually get your batteries changed anytime. You can get them upgraded, but there are companies that do that. There's one in Dublin. People are taking new Leafs, which have a bigger range, and putting them into the old Leaf because the battery packs are similar. Though I think they have to use some of the boot for that as well. So you can convert and you can upgrade them. You know, a 15, 16-year-old car is probably going to be scrapped. There's still the mechanical side of the car, like, and where the Leafs are actually the weakest is actually in their shocks and bearings. They're more robust than you think, yeah. But electric cars, you see, they don't have as many parts, right? And they don't have the engines that go wrong. So there's less to go wrong with them. So the only thing would be batteries. And if you look after them in terms of charging, like, you know, not over fast charging them all the time. But the higher range cars, which there are many now, you know, there's dozens of them now of different types, their ranges are quite good. Biggest negative aspect of electric cars is the range drops during the winter, as much as 25-30%, because they'll give you this figure and that'll be the sort of optimum. You can nearly take 25% off that in most of them, you know. So a lot of people, what they do is they have to realize that you can do a quick, you know, 200 kilowatt really fast charge depending on your car, so that you can get to those areas and around without having to charge. You know what I mean? You don't need to charge there. And then when you get back into civilization again, you can charge, you know. So that's the Portland network. That's already been rolled out on the main national roads. They're trying to roll out better for people that are maybe only living and working in their their own area. Yeah. And then you do most of your charging at home. This new scheme that's coming out at the moment, which started with the motorways and has moved on to the national roads, and now the latest one is coming to the regional and local roads, is to have a whole range of charging all over the country, not just on the main hubs or where people decide to put them. It's improved massively in the last few years, even the last year and a half. In fact, Northern Ireland, where I'm originally from, the north, we used to travel, our family were there, it was really bad. And in the last 3 months, it's quadrupled the number of fast charging. So you now have like fast charging hubs in key areas. The companies like Ionity and Fastnet and companies have come in, and they're here as well in Ireland. So there's one general app that identifies where most of them are, called PlugShare. And then there's individual apps owned by the companies, and ESB eCar, which is probably the best, really. ESB eCar is the cheapest by far, about 59 cents per kilowatt hour. whereas most of the others are in around 60, 70, even up to 80 cents.
Oh, right.
Britain is over a pound per kilowatt hour. So we're actually quite cheap, actually, in Ireland, but relative to some countries, but not a bit in the middle. But ESB are the ones that are keeping it down a bit, which is good, you know, because they have the most widespread network as well.
Brian did point out that rural drivers do a lot more mileage than urban ones. So actually having more EVs in rural areas would make the greatest savings on emissions. Although charging infrastructure is growing, rural places are not as well served. But for the growing number with solar panels at home, this is much less of a concern. Of course, buying an electric car is not something that any of us would enter into lightly. Brian recommends following owners' posts on the IVA Association website, and he says it's a really good way to work out what the stumbling blocks are and whether an EV might be for you. EVs or not, I hope that you might have heard something today that could help you reduce your travel emissions. Maybe you could just try one thing over the next few weeks to see if it's something that you could build into your normal routine and go from there. A huge thank you to all the students and teachers from Carberry School and the Ursuline College who helped to inspire us today. They and other young people across the Northwest might be participating in Cruinniú next weekend. Look out for nature-based events in Drumahair, Sligo Libraries and Sligo Woodland School. For the rest of us, next week we might try turning our attention to food. And by that I actually mean food waste. National Food Waste Recycling Week is launching on the 5th of June. And the focus is on the brown bins that have been rolled out across the country since 2024. If you check out www.foodwaste.ie or contact the Environmental Awareness Officer in Sligo, Leitrim or Donegal County Councils, you can get information on exactly what you can or can't put in your brown bin. So maybe you didn't realise that you can put cooked food in there, as well as used napkins or paper towels, or greasy cardboard like pizza boxes that can't go into paper recycling. In research on using brown bins, half of people under 35 admitted to knowingly putting unsuitable things into their brown bins. But many people mightn't realise that you can't put in wood ash, barbecue coals are large branches. We're also being asked to be sure to remove any packaging or plant pots from material being put into the brown bin, as it's also really common that they're contaminated with plastic packaging. With the help of the brown bin scheme, over 160,000 tonnes of bio waste is recycled here. But we think that we could bring that up to a whopping 500,000 tonnes with a little bit of effort. On that note, Donegal County Council is rewarding its residents for their contributions to their brown bins with a free giveaway of the precious compost they've produced at all civic community sites from today. And they'll have compost starter packs available on a first-come, first-served basis. I'm sure that any plants revived after the spell of dry weather would gratefully receive a compost top-up. So, for now, I'll allow you time to contemplate your brown bin or your bike, bus or car options. I'll be back at the end of the month for another Hours to Protect. You can listen back to the programme and all the previous episodes on oceanfm.ie, and there are also lots of tips available on hourstoprotect.ie. I hope that you'll tune in again at the end of the month. I'll talk to you then.